if you've ever made a beer and you've and it happens to be an IPA or a hazy IPA or NEPA, and you're finding that no matter how much you dry hop the beer, that you're not getting that wonderful hoppy aroma that you expect. If you don't have a dry hop issue, you've probably got a dissolved oxygen issue. G'day brewers, welcome to the Quality Focus Pro Brewers podcast. My name is Hendo and I am a coach of professional brewers at the Rockstar Brewer Academy. It's great to see you here today. And as usual, I'm joined by the man, the myth and the legend, Adzi. How are you, mate? What's been going on?
Well, mate. Not a lot, drinking a lot of beers, tasting a lot of stuff, working hard and doing my other podcast as well. So we did that Monday. So filmed a couple episodes.
Mate, I recently got back from Japan, had 3 weeks over in Japan and got back and went, oh, I just want to drink some local beer. So I jumped on my scooter to go and head over and see you on a Friday afternoon and you weren't there.
I know.
You had the day off.
Oh, mate. And it's been ages since we've caught up and I'm jealous as well because when you're in Japan, you sent me a photo of you with Lana from the Ukraine, who's peddling the Ukrainian golden ale everywhere, and then she gave you a can, and I'm like, this is just it's a small world.
But yeah, because I was judging beer at the International Beer Cup in Sapporo, and Lana was one of the judges, and it was really interesting because there's a chat between, because you know Lana through the Ukrainian golden ale collab beer that you did with Maddie Wolf at Brew Baron.
Yep.
I don't know how you organized that up, but I was just sitting there.
I found a style and that said, like, I'll brew it.
Yeah, right. But I was just sitting there at dinner after the day's judging, sitting next to Lana, and we're having a Genghis Khan, which is basically it's like thick Korean barbecue, but it's done with lamb or mutton. And you're just cooking on the table. And this room was just full of smoke. It was hard to breathe and your eyes were stinging from all of the smoke from the grills in the restaurant. And Lana just sort of mentioned, oh, you're from Brisbane. I said, yeah. Yeah. I said, do you know Matt and Adzi? And I went, yeah. And we just got chatting from there. And she was lovely to catch up with. Very, very talented judge. Really good beer writer and that sort of thing. Oh, good writer. Mostly about beer. It was a good time in Japan. Really good. For those who don't know, I've got two friends that have the same name, Adam Shell, which is one's right here, and the other one lives around the corner. And other Adam Shell got married. And so the whole trip in Japan was just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, Nezuko looked like they had a great wedding. They're such a great looking couple, but you could just tell how happy Adam was. And Nezuko was just emotional and beautiful.
Natsuko wore a kimono. Like they had the wedding ceremony and then they had the reception. And then after the wedding reception, they said, oh, the wedding couple are going to get changed. And you think they're going to get changed into casual clothes because they're in wedding dresses and suits. Nope. They come out with, Natsuko's wearing a $100,000 kimono.
Holy shit.
And I'm like, holy moly. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's just insane. And it was just, the whole day was just perfect. So
yeah, I think weddings are a great way to experience other cultures too.
100%. Yes. Yes. The language barrier was huge. I can basically order a tap beer and an egg sandwich in Japanese. That's it. All right, mate. What are we going to talk about today?
Mate, DO or dissolved oxygen.
Dissolved oxygen.
Yeah, well, we've touched on
absolutely.
We've touched on it in other episodes where we talk about you don't want to get oxygen in here and other stuff like that. But it's DO is a nightmare for brewers, and it's weird because at the start of the process you want oxygen, but then it flips, and you don't want any. So it's
absolutely yes. It's a very tumultuous relationship that brewers have with oxygen in being dissolved in liquids and that sort of thing. The thing is, you're right, is that at the start of fermentation, you know, if you're using liquid yeast or repitch yeast, you'll go to oxygenate your wort to help encourage cell division. But as soon as fermentation starts, you hate dissolved oxygen or DO, and you don't want it anywhere near your product. Now, every professional brewer knows that dissolved oxygen is bad for beer, right? But what we're going to do today is we're going to dive into some of the intricacies around dissolved oxygen and sorts of things it can do to your beer and how much is bad and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So what are, like, what are the issues that it can affect? Like, just the basic ones straight off the bat, like, because everyone, like you and I, have done beer judging and we know what it tastes like and what it looks like in a beer, but yeah, what else can it do and what else does it do? And
like, dissolved oxygen, straight up, as I kind of like to think about it, as soon as fermentation starts and there's any ethanol in the product, even though fermentation might not have fully completed, that's the point for me when it stops being wort and starts being beer, and that and you need to take that approach where oxygen needs to not be in anywhere near the product, right? So you need to think about some of the damage that dissolved oxygen causes to beer. The number one thing that the very first thing that happens is reduced hop aroma, right? So if you've ever made a beer and it happens to be an IPA or a hazy IPA or NEIPA or something like that, and you're finding that no matter how much you dry hop the beer, you know, 1 pound, 2 pounds, 3 pounds, 4 pounds per barrel or lots of grams per liter and that sort of thing, you find that no matter how much dry hop you put in the beer, that you're not getting that wonderful hoppy aroma that you expect. Chances are, adding more dry hop isn't going to solve the problem, because you don't have a dry hop issue. You've probably got a dissolved oxygen issue.
Yeah.
And the reason is that oxygen in beer, the very first thing that will attack is the monoterpenes, which are those citrus and pine aromas in beer, right? So that's probably the first thing. Some of the other damage that can get caused by dissolved oxygen, diacetyl formation, right? So if you've ever cracked a can of beer and it's an absolute D-bomb, the reason why diacetyl is formed as a result of oxygen ingress is because of that step from the diacetyl precursor, which is called alpha-acetylactate. Alpha-acetylactate, we can't smell and taste it, but it undergoes this process called oxidative decarboxylation, which sounds as a big bloody word, mate, but basically it means it picks up an oxygen and drops a CO2. So alpha-acetylactate, oxidative decarboxylation, becomes diacetyl. Okay. Now, if you've got beer in a can and you haven't canned or kegged that beer particularly well, there's been oxygen ingress during packaging, any residual AAL that's in the beer will turn into diacetyl. And because most, you know, craft brewers, they keep their beer cold, the yeast, you know, yeast will normally clean up diacetyl, but if the beer is cold, then the yeast aren't active. And so that diacetyl is going to stay in the beer.
And that's why we do those diacetyl rests. And
that's why you do diacetyl rests before you crush chill a beer. Exactly. Because you want to make sure, and because technically that's not a test for diacetyl, that's a test for AAL.
Yeah. Right?
The other thing that can happen as a result of oxygen ingress is discoloration of the beer. Right. So let's say you're in your kitchen, Adzi, and you've got an apple and you cut that apple in half and leave it on the kitchen bench. What's going to happen to the apple?
Browns up.
Exactly. That is an oxidation reaction or a reaction with oxygen. Mm. And the same thing happens to beer. So it's really interesting. I can actually see it during judging. I can actually see that a beer has undergone a lot of oxygen ingress, because for me, I'll look at the beer and I can see that the beer's got this brownish, grayish, almost greenish tinge to it.
Yeah, some hazy beers get that purpley color.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you've seen some of the photos on the internet where they've got two beers from the same canning run side by side. One hazy looks okay, and the other one's gone dark brown. That's that discoloration from oxygen that can occur. The other thing is that oxygen also has an effect on raw materials, particularly hop pellets or hops before you use them. If you don't store your hops properly, oxygen will degrade hop pellets, and the hops will go what I call cheesy or sweaty, and that's isovaleric acid. So basically the ultimate beer will either taste like Parmesan cheese, or smell and taste like Parmesan cheese, or it would smell and taste like sweaty socks. Fun fact is that I've only had COVID once, and before COVID, I always picked up isovaleric acid as cheesy, but now I can only pick it up as sweaty, but it's the same thing. And then as the beer starts to age, kind of like the things that I've listed are basically the order in which things degrade as a result of dissolved oxygen. Things like, you know, sherry and acetic notes can happen, you know, from oxidation of ethanol into acetaldehyde. Acetaldehyde oxidizes into sherry and acetic notes. And you wind up with that beer that's ultimately really stale and yuck.
Yeah, it's just, sort of thing. It's not nice to drinking or to look at.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's basically the damage that can happen to beer as a result of dissolved oxygen, right?
Really?
It's not a pretty story.
Because unlike CO2, which, like we say, there's some cheap ways to measure CO2 in your beer, DO is a little bit harder, hey? Why are the machines for DO so much more expensive?
Yeah. We've done an episode on water chemistry recently and that sort of thing. And when you're putting together a water profile, you think about how much calcium you want in your water, and that's measured in parts per million. Right, so one part per million is 1 milligram per liter, basically. With dissolved oxygen, the amount of dissolved oxygen that can do damage to beer is measured in parts per billion, right?
Yep.
So one part per billion is 1/1000th of a part per million.
Yeah.
Right? So as you can imagine, the tolerance for dissolved oxygen in beer is really, really, really low. And we'll talk about some of the specifics of that later, right? Yeah. And so because the tolerance for dissolved oxygen in beer is measured in parts per billion, the instrumentation required to measure something in parts per billion needs to be really, really sensitive, right? And that's what makes it quite expensive, you know? So if you go to a lot of breweries, when they start, they don't have a low range DO meter. Okay. There are high range DO meters and low range DO meters. High range DO meters measure in parts per million. Low range DO meters measure in parts per billion. You can pick up a high range DO meter, which is totally decent for measuring the oxygen in wort, for a few $100, because they use commonly in soil testing. But for parts per billion, low range, you know, they start at about $10,000. Really, really expensive.
And it's
not something you can outsource either.
No, and that's the only job it does too. It's like
you can get a Gehaltometer or a C-box that can check your carbonation at the same time and that sort of thing. But yes, it's basically the only job that that instrument does is measure dissolved oxygen in beer.
Yeah, so what are we doing to stop DO? Like, it's not, a lot of the measures in breweries now aren't so much trying to measure your DO. Like, what you're doing is pre all of that is just all the preventative things that you're able to do to stop it, right?
A low-range DO meter can be very inaccessible for a lot of breweries. And I would say probably the uptake, actually, I don't want to guess, but I would say less than half of the breweries out there would have a low-range DO meter, right?
Mm.
And so the thing is, you've got to put yourself, you know, like a lot of breweries, particularly when they start up, really common thing that's said is, oh, I can't, you know, they look at $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 instrument and they go, oh, I can't afford that, you know. And so what happens is these breweries, they start without a DO meter. Now,
a lot of the time too, I think it's that ROI, and you're not getting, you're looking at it going, oh, well, that does that. But if I can manage all these processes beforehand, I don't need that, and I can spend that money on something that's going to give me some income back.
Absolutely. You're right. It's like, particularly with home brewers who go pro, they don't see the value in a DO meter. In fact, I was having a chat with Reese at Carbon Six.
Right, yeah. Yep.
I was there last week for a field trip and that sort of thing. And, you know, he's a member of the Rockstar Brewer Academy community and that sort of thing. And I was talking to his brewery owner. This is the common thing that happens, right? Because it's such an expensive instrument. You might be an employee at a brewery trying to persuade your brewery owner to go and spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 on a DO meter. And the owner is going to have trouble justifying that expenditure on such an expensive instrument because they're going to struggle to see the return on investment. But the thing is, right, is that you need to have your own DO meter within the four walls of your brewery because the way that dissolved oxygen works, right, is oxygen, when it gets ingressed into beer, is a highly reactive, oxygen is a very highly reactive molecule, right? And so what happens is it will bond with other molecules in the beer and start the process of staling or, you know, depleting hop aroma compounds and that sort of thing within as little as 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah, once it's in there, you can't get it
out. Exactly. Well, once it's in there, you can't get it out, or you kind of can get it out, but you've got to be quick, basically. Yeah. It's one of the skills we teach in the Rockstar Brewer Academy community. It's like, just in case this happens, here's what you need to do really, really quickly. It's not ideal, but yes, you can get rid of it, but you've got to be quick sticks about it. So the really interesting thing, right, is that this is why dissolved oxygen is really kind of insidious, right? Because it bonds and reacts with other molecules, and then that O2, right, once it's bonded with another molecule, it's no longer dissolved oxygen, right? So your $30,000 instrument can't see the dissolved oxygen anymore because it's no longer O2. And because that happens so quickly, you can't, for instance, I mean, I had a brewer come up to me a few months ago and they said, oh, you know, our beers are all oxidized, and we checked the beer with a DO meter at a local friendly brewery and there was no DO in it. I said, well, when did you package the beer? And he said, 3 months ago. And I said, mate, that DO was gone in 30 minutes, let alone 3 months. It literally disappears. And so what happens is, if you think about the beer production process from, you know, let's, you know, wort production, fermentation, let's say you transfer the beer from a fermenter to a bright tank, and then you go from bright tank into a can, right? You may ingress oxygen as you move the beer to the bright beer tank, right? And so let's say you ingress a couple of hundred parts per billion. In 20 to 30 minutes, you'll go and measure that beer, and that DO will significantly gone because it started to react, and ultimately it's going to get back down to near zero, right? So you no longer see it. And then you go and can the beer, and let's say you don't have a great canning line, or there's an error or loose fitting or something like that, and you go and ingress another, say, 200 parts per billion during canning, right? You don't have 200 parts per billion of DO ingress, you've got 400.
Yeah,
because you've already given it 200 parts per billion of DO damage. It's bonded, started to cause damage to the beer, and then you've gone and whacked another 200 at it. So DO ingress is cumulative, right? So even if you own a DO meter, it's very problematic. You know,
unless you're measuring it, that it disappears all the time.
That's what you need to do. If you have a DO meter, is you've got to keep constant eye on your DO levels whenever you do something to the beer.
I remember at Helios, we had two bright tanks, and one of them we worked out was always having a little bit of oxygen in the beers, and we couldn't work out why. And then we found a little tiny split where the CO2 was going when we were carbing the beer. There was a little split, and it was sucking oxygen in through that little slit as the CO2.
Oh, so you're putting, you're carbonating, say, into a carb stone or something?
Through a carb stone, and the CO2 wasn't coming out, but it was sucking oxygen in. And
it's the Venturi effect.
Yeah, yeah. The super smallest little slit. And as soon as we found it, look, we checked everything. Once we worked out, it was just the one bright. When that makes it a bit easier. Something to do with the bright tank itself, not the thing.
And, absolutely. Yeah. You know, the thing is that the amount of dissolved oxygen that does damage to beer is tiny. So we've talked about the fact that it's measured in parts per billion. Now, typically, 100 parts per billion, right, is enough to start to do anything beyond that is enough to sort of start to do significant damage to beer.
Yep.
But in this day and age with breweries doing hazy IPAs, you know, the tolerance, particularly because there's so a lot of terpenes, a lot of hop aroma compounds in the beer, 50 parts per billion, it's half that. If you're above that and you're, you know, like these, like I have a lot of respect for breweries that do hazy IPA and get it in a can to a consumer in great condition, because you know they're absolutely on top of the dissolved oxygen thing, because they're so, like, hazy IPA, you know, West Coast IPA, any hoppy beer style, they're delicate.
Yeah.
And they're so easily damaged by dissolved oxygen. And you know, commonly now, you need to have your beer from the fermenter into the bright tank, into the can, less than a cumulative 50 parts per billion.
Right. So how do we visualize that?
Exactly. So the thing is, right, is that, well, you got to think about that, right? Because typically beer at the end of fermentation usually has a bit of background dissolved oxygen, right? Because we're all oxidizing.
Yeah.
Some call it aging. I like to think I'm a good, great bottle of wine, keep getting better with age, right? But it's all oxidation or oxidizing. Okay. So 50 parts per billion in the can, and you're going to get somewhere between 5 and 20 background in the fermenter before you even move the beer, right? So that's only giving you a budget of 30 to 45 ppb of pickup.
Yep.
From fermenter straight into can if you're unitanking the beer, or fermenter to bright tank to can or keg, whatever your pack, you know, format is. That's not a lot.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, right, is that if you don't own a DO meter, how can you know how much dissolved oxygen is going to damage your beer, right? So the way that I think about, you know, the ingress of oxygen into beer is, and the volume of oxygen, right? So if you think of our atmosphere here, right? So our atmosphere is 21% oxygen.
Yep.
Right. It's mostly nitrogen, some oxygen, some CO2, and some other shit that doesn't really matter or not. But 21% oxygen. Okay. So let's say I've got a 10 barrel or 10 hectolitre or 1,000 litres of beer in a 1,000 litre tank, 10-barrel tank. What do you reckon, Adzi? How much air ingress, knowing that oxygen makes up 21% of that, how much air ingress would be enough to cause 100 parts per billion of damage to that beer?
But I don't know. I just remember your thimble in a Olympic swimming pool.
That's Charlie Bamforth who said that. Yes, he said a thimble full of air can ruin Olympic swimming pool size.
That's always what I know. It's just a super small.
Absolutely, right. So I'm going to do some rough beer coaster mathematics for you, without talking about moles and 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd, all that sort of shit, but just rough maths, close enough for this conversation, right? So if air is 21% oxygen and you've got 1,000 litres or 10 barrels of beer, the volume of air ingress that would cause 100 parts per billion damage is 0.45 millilitres of air in 1,000 litres or 10 barrels of beer.
Mm. So that's nothing.
It's not zero.
No.
but it's bugger all.
Yeah.
Right? And so shall we do that in freedom units, right? So if you've got 10 barrels of beer, it is 0.018 fluid ounces of air in 10 barrels of beer.
Yeah, it's such a small number.
Oh, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. And that's why you've got to have all your practices in place of every single step of the way, like CO2 purging, flushing beer out as you need to, like every single step needs to be down to the nth degree because of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is, right, is that whenever you do something with beer in your brewery, right, there is always going to be the risk of oxygen ingress. In fact, you need to consider that it's going to be inevitable.
Yep.
Your job as the brewer is to make sure that you lower the risk to a point where it becomes acceptable. And so, you know, let me give you some examples, right, of where, you know, oxygen ingress can become a risk in your brewery, right? So you're taking a sample, right, from a tank. Okay. So you've got, you know, if you're opening up a sample tap or a Zwickel on your tank, there is the risk that things could go backwards as well as forwards. Okay. Crash chilling beer. It's a classic one. Let's say you've got that same 1,000-liter or 10-barrel tank and it's at fermentation temperature. You know, it's in the, say, 20 degrees Celsius or 60, 70 degrees Fahrenheit, right? And you crash chill that beer down to 0 degrees or 32 Fahrenheit. Liquids shrink when they, you know, cold things contract and warm things expand, okay? And beer, because it's a water-based liquid, is no different. So when you chill a beer down from fermentation temperature down to 0 degrees or 32 Fahrenheit, at 4 degrees Celsius, or what's that, but probably about 38 degrees, you know, 40 degrees Fahrenheit, that beer is going to shrink by 4% in volume, okay? So if you've got 1,000 liters of beer in a 1,000-liter or 10-barrel tank, right, and you've got the blow-off open and you put the beer on chill, the beer is going to shrink. And as the beer shrinks, it's going to suck its air into the headspace of the tank.
Mm.
Right? Because you don't want to put, you know, if the tank's open, that's what's going to happen. Because when something becomes smaller in an enclosed space, that volume has to be replaced with something and it's going to be air. Right?
Yep.
So if it shrinks by, if you've got 1,000 liters or 10 barrels of beer and it shrinks by 4%, right, that's 40 liters of air.
Yeah.
Right? And, or about a third of a barrel of air going into the headspace.
Yep.
Now, if we know that the budget for air ingress is 0.45 milliliters or 0.018 fluid ounces, right, you've blown that budget by tens of thousands of times, right? Just by not having, you know, and it's easy to fix. All you got to do is put some CO2 pressure on your tank, right, so that the headspace is full of CO2 positive pressure before you go and put the beer on chill. Because as you put the beer on chill, yes, the pressure will decrease because the volume in the headspace will increase. But you stop the ingress of 40 liters or a third of a barrel of air touching your beer and literally ruin it before you even package it. It's crazy stuff. So, you know, our job is about minimizing risk when you move beer and that sort of thing, right? You got to think about, you know, how can I make sure that the beer doesn't touch any air whatsoever, knowing your budget is 0.45 milliliters per 1,000 liters of beer. That's your job.
Yeah. Right?
And it's inevitable. So you just got to minimize the risk.
It's going to be more DO with canning and bottling as opposed to kegging?
Not necessarily. Not if it's done properly. Anytime you do something with the beer, you're introducing that risk. Right? And all risks need to be mitigated, right? And so the mantra that I like to use in my own mind when I'm thinking about dissolved oxygen ingress into beer is think small, act big.
Yep. Okay?
So think small, act big basically means this, right? And I'm sure he's talked about this when you're in the brewery at TAFE and that sort of thing, right? So think small means visualize everywhere where there can be air that could touch the beer, okay? And it could be something, so you've got a transfer line, right? And if you've got inch and a half brewer's hose, 1 meter is 1 liter, according to Matty Wolf.
Yeah, right?
What a legend for giving us that number.
That was a good trick, that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So if your tank's right, like literally, you know, right next to each other, you're going to have a couple of meters of hose. So that's 2 liters of air.
Yeah.
And again, coming back to the 10-barrel tank, 10 hectoliter tank, that 2 liters of air, you've blown your budget by thousands of times in air. All right. So, and it's things like if you think about a butterfly valve, right? So if I just held a butterfly valve that was closed in my hand and held it vertically, so it's like a shot glass, pretty fucking shot glass, but you get the idea. And if I poured liquid into the well of the butterfly valve, how much liquid would the butterfly valve hold? Probably 40, 50 milliliters.
Yeah, I'd say to be close to a shot.
And again,
yeah,
it's exactly. Well, a shot in Australia is 30 mils because we measure that sort of thing.
Yeah.
They're free pour in the US and everywhere else.
Yeah.
But 30 mils, you know, 40 mils or something like that. And so if your CO2 in your brewery, for instance, is on triclover, some breweries do, then if you just hook the CO2 up, put the pressure on the CO2 and then open the valve, you're pushing that 30, 40 milliliters of air into the tank and you're done.
Yeah. And then you get a nickname, D.O. Mason.
Exactly. It's a verb. Don't mason the beer, right? And that's exactly what happened, right?
Yeah.
Because that's so Mason was one of the graduates of the students of from the technical college that I teach at. And he actually did that in the teaching brewery. Is he hooked up the gas without sort of purging that airspace in the butterfly valve and put 40 milliliters of air through a carb stone, which is going to increase the surface area. So if we go back to the carbonation thing, increased surface area means that the gas is going to dissolve much more readily.
Right.
And that was only a 250-liter tank.
Right.
So he'd blown that budget. And we he started carbonating the beer, and then we checked it with the C-Box, and the DO had gone up to 350 ppv in literal minutes.
Right.
You know, we only carbonated the beer for 4 or 5 minutes and it went to 350 ppb. And I was like, what's going on here? And then I asked Mason, I said, how did you hook up the gas to the carb zone? He goes, I just do what I normally do. He was already working in a brewery.
Yep.
And he just goes, I'll do what I normally do and just hooked it up. And I said, mate, you failed to take into account the well of the butterfly valve and you've just pushed air into the tank. And he's like, oh shit. But in his brewery, he worked with 10,000 liter or 100 barrel tanks. So 40 milliliters of air didn't really matter in 10,000 liters of beer.
Yeah.
But it matters a lot in 250 liters of beer because it's concentrated.
Yeah. But it's still, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Anytime that the DO goes into the beer, you're blowing your budget straight away. Right. So think small. That's one part. So you got to think about all the little nooks and crannies in your brewery, in your beer, where air can touch your beer. Okay. Headspace, butterfly valves, hoses, cans, big fat bubbles, you know, big fat, you know, you need those nice muffin tops on your cans when you're canning your beer. Not any big bubbles, they're full of air, not CO2. So that's think small, right? And so if we think about think small, act big, the act big is purge the shit out of it with some gas that's not air, right? You can use, or you can even use a liquid if you so desire, right? As long as there's no oxygen in it, you're good, right? So some of your options, most common one is purging things with CO2, right? Now, you know, you're going to purge your transfer line. You're going to purge your bright tank before you go transfer beer into it because you've got 1,000-liter fermenter and you've got 1,000-liter bright beer tank.
Yep.
There's 1,000 liters of air, which you definitely don't want your beer to touch, right? So that's why we brewers spend a lot of time purging tanks, right? And so using CO2 to purge is one option. There are some CO2 shortages around the world at the moment. And another option is to use nitrogen gas. You can use nitrogen out of a bottle, or you can have a nitrogen generator installed in your brewery and use that to purge. And another option is to use deaerated water, right? Which is basically soda water or club soda if you're one of our American friends, right? And you can use deaerated water to purge stuff. Good for hoses, not so much for tanks. It's pretty inefficient.
Yeah.
But that's think small, act big. It's a massive, whenever I'm working with beer in a brewery, I always have think small, act big in the back of my mind.
Yeah. You get any like big examples of where you've seen DO in a beer that shouldn't be there, but people don't recognize it? Like, are there any commercial things that it can be in, or
where like, as in examples of how I've seen oxidized beer and that sort of thing? Yeah. I've seen examples of the diacetyl bomb and discoloration. You do see that occasionally in beers, where basically you might buy a 4-pack or a 6-pack of some beer. 5 of the beers might be okay, and one's discolored and diacetyl and no hop aroma and all that sort of thing. That's probably a sign that one of the fill heads or one of the purging heads in your canning machine might not be operating properly. That's really common. Beer that just stales, you know, if you've got your beer, right, if you're a professional brewer and you're packaging your beer and you're not happy with the shelf life, you know, if you're putting, say, a 6 or a 9 month best before date on your product and it's not making it to, you know, if the flavor stability of the beer isn't making it to that 6 or 9 month period, the very first thing you'd go and look at is some dissolved oxygen ingress somewhere in your process.
Yeah. Right?
And you've got to do a really good, hard look at yourself and work out, you know, where that oxygen is happening. And again, coming back to having a DO meter in your brewery, you can't can your beer, chuck it in the car, jump in the car and drive even 5 minutes around the corner to a local friendly brewery that's got a DO meter and a can piercing device. Because by the time you get there, the DO is going to start to bond and to disappear.
Yeah.
So if you find yourself in this situation where your beer is becoming a victim of oxygen ingress, and you notice that I haven't sort of talked about oxidation, I've talked about oxygen ingress.
Yeah.
They sound the same and they are related, because oxygen is an oxidizer.
Okay.
But the oxidation is the degradation of the beer, but it's oxygen ingress that causes the oxidation.
Mm. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Right?
So you've got to ask yourself, right, when's the best time to buy a DO meter for a brewery? And the answer is really simple in my mind, is that if the raw materials and labor and energy costs of a tank of beer, right, and what revenue you would get from selling that volume of beer is more than the cost of a DO meter, it's time to buy a DO meter.
Yep. Yeah, it's worth it if you can save that batch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, measuring dissolved oxygen in a brewery is you take lots of DO measurements because it's a preventative thing. You're checking in, and because dissolved oxygen disappears so quickly, it has to be done in real time. You have to have a DO meter.
Mm.
You can't outsource it to a lab. You can't take the beer around the corner to a local friendly brewery. It's just physically not possible. That's just the chemistry of it. You have to have a DO meter within the four walls of the brewery and checking your beer in real time. And so if the revenue you would generate from tank of beer is more than what a DO meter would cost, then it's time to get a DO meter.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have to be a big brewery to get to have a DO meter. Like, you know, Smokey and Lukey down at Currumbin Valley, they're only allowed to brew 40,000 litres or 400 barrels of beer per year.
Yep.
Per year.
Yeah.
And they've got a Gehaltometer.
Yep.
Right. Because they know that the risk to their business, because they're such a small business, is so high.
Yeah.
They know that they need to have this instrument kind of as an insurance policy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Can I throw one at you? You said earlier about hazy beers and using all the hops and all the terpenes that are in there. You got all these new products coming out now, so like abstract hops, so we're using them in a few beers at work. We had a Evergreen, which was our terpene IPA, which had the Pineapple Express in there, and we've got a new one that Dan was doing yesterday, so we've got guava, mango, and blah 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 terpenes. Do those terpenes act the same as if they're from the hops with DO, or do they react differently, or what's the go there? And like, is there any risk to using these products? Do you need to be as stringent when you're adding these things as well? Like, is there a special way to add these products?
So you're basically saying is that if dissolved oxygen attacks the terpenes as one of the first compounds that the oxygen would react with, if I actually go put an excessive amount of terpenes in the beer, is that going to counter any oxygen that might ingress into the beer? So that the oxygen will react with some of the terpenes, but then the oxygen would ultimately be depleted, but there would still be some terpenes left.
Yeah.
Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah, yeah.
That's an interesting way to put it. I've never really...
I've only thought about it because we've started using these terpene flavors that I was like, how does that sort of correlate with...
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I mean, essentially, that's right. You're right. If I increase the amount of terpenes in the beer and if I still have a very small amount of oxygen ingress, and assuming, and it's a big assumption, that all the oxygen is going to react with all of the terpenes that it's able to, but that's not necessarily the case because it's going to react with other stuff as well, you know, crystal malt,
yep,
you know, all that sort of stuff, then possibly. But then you got to think about what other flavor active compounds are created by the oxygen reacting with the terpenes.
Yeah.
They don't just disappear. They make other compounds that may be considered to be off flavors in beer. So, yes, while you're putting additional terpenes into the beer to counteract any dissolved oxygen that might make it into a beer, you might be creating some other off flavors from the reaction of those terpenes.
Yeah.
And whether they're flavor active and that sort of thing, I'm not sure, but it's something that you would need to consider. I don't think adding more terpenes into a beer should be a replacement for think small, act big.
Yeah, no, that's not what I mean.
At all.
Is there a bigger risk with adding a big flush of terpenes?
Yeah, but the thing is, right, is that let's say I put a big, big dose of abstract terpenes straight into the tank, but let's say, for example, I've still got shitty process. I'm not doing think small, act big. You're going to consume all those terpenes regardless.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got hundreds and hundreds of parts per billion, those terpenes are going to get destroyed no matter how much you put in there if there's a big enough amount of oxygen, dissolved oxygen in the beer. So I guess my answer to that would be kind of, perhaps, but your mileage might vary and I don't think it should be a replacement for either think small, act big, or actually measuring DO in your beer with a low-range DO meter. Good question.
Yeah, you're welcome. We get one every episode. That's a good one.
I love it. I love it. It's so good. So how are you feeling about that, mate? Do you feel like you're a bit more clued up on dissolved oxygen?
Always learning.
Now and that sort of
thing? Yeah. Love learning more every time I chat to you about these things. It's always good.
If you want to learn more about the details on how to implement think small, act big in your brewery, some of the practical tips and that sort of thing, it's one of the things that we teach at the Rockstar Brewer Academy that I coach about and that sort of thing. We actually have a module called Minimize Dissolved Oxygen, and it's one of the more popular modules because just with that knowledge, right, and no DO meter, and you're going to be making phenomenal beer and award-winning beer and that sort of thing.
Right.
So if you want to have a chat to me one-on-one, you can book what's called a calibration call with me. So if you head to rockstarbrewer.com, there's a button there. You can book a calibration call. I'd love to have a chat to you and see if we're a good fit for each other. And also don't forget to join the Facebook group, Quality Focus Pro Brewers Podcast Facebook group. Just go to qualityfocusprobrewers.com. All the last episodes are there. There's awesome photos of you. There's not so good photos of me. And you can get a link there to come and join the Facebook group as well. So it's all good.
Yeah, it's a cool group. There's a lot more people starting to interact as well and ask questions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really good. There's been lots of people asking questions. Honestly, it's not just about the podcast. I work really, really hard to make sure that it's for professional brewers only. Remember I did that poll last week, where I said I get lots of people, you know, wanting to join and they're not necessarily professional brewers. Now, I've got nothing against home brewers or anything like that, But there's lots of places for home brewers to go and not that many safe spaces for professional brewers to go. So it's a pro brewer safe space, that sort of thing.
I can't imagine brewers buying PO meters.
No, not really. But there's been, if you've got questions, technical questions about brewing and that sort of thing, that's a good place to ask. And it's a good safe space. So
yeah,
Adzi, that's heaps for today.
No worries, really, mate. Cool. Always enjoyable. I had a good time. Hope that I asked some good questions.
Mate, you always have that one curveball. Yes. I love it. Thanks, mate. I'll catch you in the next one.
No worries, mate. Cheers.